Support for As the Worm Turns is provided by Paeonia Farm and Home Supply, with a mission to meet the needs of the do-it-yourselfer for over 30 years. Paeonia Farm and Home offers organic gardening supplies, tools, paint, and more. Additional information at paeoniafarmandhome.com or 527-3301.
Good evening and welcome to As the Worm Turns. It's Tuesday night. It's the live gardening show from KVNF in beautiful North Fork, Paeonia. We've got Lulu Volkhausen here. Hi, Lulu.
Hello, Jill.
And Lance Swaggart.
Yeah, hello.
Good evening. Our favorite gardeners and here to take your questions, your comments, your concerns and problems. 527-4868-1866. KVNF now. And wow, that rain just feels heavenly, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
And Lance, you were talking about how great the plants feel, and they just seem to have this.
Yeah, well, they stand up. They've all had the dust washed off.
And washed
they just,
off.
They just sort of, it's not like a heat day.
Mm-hmm. Things are a lot taller, mm-hmm. and yeah. I noticed that. I think things go crazy, but I think that's what it is. They just are reaching a little bit higher.
Yeah, and the humidity.
Yep, the humidity. Ooh, I feel it right now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's good. It's so nice that everything just perks up. But, you know, you have to, I looked in my rain gauge. I mean, it was like a quarter of an inch. That was it.
Really? That was it?
Yeah, that was it.
Didn't feel like it last night, boy. I slept really well.
Oh, I did. Yeah, right? Doesn't take much.
No, it doesn't. And some great stuff. Everything's going on in the garden right now. We've got planting still going on. We've got stuff coming up. We've got harvesting. We've got thinning. All kinds of good stuff. Lulu?
Well,
what's up?
I thinned broccoli, kale, and collards this week. And what else did I? You know, I just like tidied things up. I cut down a lot of stuff. I have lovage in my garden. It's one of those umbral, fabulous. You know, just all of my umbrals just kind of roll along and keep flowering all summer. Always have something for those little bracknid wasps. Mm-hmm. And I just got in and started hacking and whacking and lightening things up. And
there you go. You were kind of thinning your whole salad situation.
Mm-hmm.
Your cabbage.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Spinach.
Yep. Thinned the broccoli, thinned mm-hmm. the kale, thinned the collards, pruned the tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things like that.
And you're a pruner of tomatoes, and not everybody is a pruner of tomatoes. Lance?
I don't prune them.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't even grow them. But he grows my carrots. So.
He grows your carrots. That's right.
Well, so if you need a, tomato or two, we're good.
And you mentioned you have some special trophy kind of salad plants going on right now.
Oh,
what about those?
Oh, my God. The arugula, right? Okay. Uh-huh. So you really shouldn't have arugula at this time of the year. It's too hot. But my gardens don't get on. I know. What about it? I don't know. It's crazy. My gardens don't get the sun like yours do. So, Lance, so for me to grow onions, for instance, is crazy because I just don't have the hours of direct daylight.
Right. You've got a lot of trees and mm-hmm. shade in your.
And it's a narrow lot. So you got to get the timing right with things.
Yeah.
And the arugula, I have two kinds. I have your basic standard big leaf arugula, and the French and the Italian Italians could go to war over whether it was the Italians that found it or the French. And the French call it rocket, and the Italians call it arugula. So, it's the Silvette arugula then is decidedly Italian, as I understand mm-hmm. it. And that's the one that I just love, and it's everywhere. But the basic standard rocket arugula is it trophy right now.
Nice. And you're going to be doing some pesto with that.
Yes, I am.
Yummy. And some other stuff coming up in both your gardens, but let's get somebody on the phone here. 527-486-8186 KVNF. Now, peas are one of those things that are coming up everywhere, huh, Lance?
Well, if you plant them, they're coming up.
Yeah. And
well, your peas came up in 6 days.
Mine did too.
Yeah.
Wow. Mine did too.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Six days. And it's a can be a struggle with the heat, but the ground was moist, and then I watered it on top of it, and they came up in 6 days.
Yeah.
Both snap peas and snow peas.
Mm-hmm.
And the bush beans came up in the same amount of time.
Oh, that's
and
great.
And then I did an experiment. I planted a whole nother row of that. Just 10 days later,
uh-huh.
just to see how they grow and harvest.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's a 50-foot row.
50-foot row. Yeah.
Right. We're laughing, Jill and I, because we have mine's. Oh, I think actually mine's about 10 feet, maybe.
Yeah.
That's a good row for you, little
10,
Lulu.
10, 8 feet, something like that.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. it'll be interesting to see. I'm going, now, why am I doing this? Because who's going to be around to harvest all this stuff?
Well, you never know. We might just be sailing into that long October again, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think I think that the peas can take a frost,
mm-hmm.
too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they like the cooler weather.
And there's some other stuff that likes cooler weather and whether it likes it, but it maybe tastes better when the cooler weather comes on.
Yeah, the kale and the collards, some of those kind of greens, when they get a frost on them, the sugar content just goes up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I really, you know, people say my carrots are good, but wait till they have a frost on them.
Right.
Yeah. Then
they
golden.
Really get good.
Yeah.
Do you think that's something about the North Fork Valley in particular, is how the nights cool down and that breeze that comes down the valley? And does that make our food taste better? I have that theory.
Yes, mm-hmm. it does.
And I would say so. Absolutely.
I think at the experimental station, they were doing a test with a Japanese winter squash. I forget the varieties
uh-huh.
there on Rogers Mesa.
Uh-huh.
And he was taking those squash and sending them to the Japanese to test them. And they were totally blown away at the quality, especially the sugar content. And it's the cool nights that are doing that.
Right, right.
Right.
Yeah.
Because all plants, sugar is the mainstay of life. I mean, all the plants take the starch that they produce and turn it into sugar, and they store it, and the perennials store it and
mm-hmm.
reuse it. And so it's all about making sugar.
Right. If we could get back to that natural sugar, we'd be healthier people for sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So we've got kale and collard and cabbage, and you harvested some very specific kale recently for seed.
Yeah,
right,
I just
Lance?
Did that over the weekend. I planted last year, it's a biennial, so I planted Sutherland kale, which is a smooth-skinned or smooth-leaf kale,
mm-hmm.
and it's rare. It's not extinct, and I think it comes from, with that name, I think it comes from England.
Uh-huh.
And so I harvested that last week, and I'm drying it on tarps. And let's see. I'll probably have 2 to 3 pounds of seed when I'm done.
Wow.
And that's astonishing.
Yeah, that is astonishing.
And you need, when you're seed saving, you need to have 20, 30 plants. And that's to get genetic diversity within the species.
Okay.
You can do one and you'll get some seed. But if you keep on growing that one for seed, it gets inbred.
Right.
So that's why you need the more the better.
Uh-huh. And you've kind of got this whole drying thing going on right now in your garden. I mean, you've got all kinds of stuff that's drying out.
Drying out.
Yeah.
Well, not in the garden, in the house.
In the house.
In the garden.
In the shed.
In the shed.
In the spare bedroom.
Yeah.
Right,
The wheat and the other small grains in the house tied in bundles. And you dry those out and leave them on the stalks as long as possible. And they gain more nutrition that way, even though they're not. And there's something else that goes on, and I can find out what that is. But they store better, too.
Right. So you're just not harvesting and going out there and just tearing the plant down. You're leaving it on the stalk. You're going to get better nutritional
mm-hmm.
value out of it.
Yeah. And I probably won't thresh and clean that till fall. Mm-hmm. I've even waited till winter just because I didn't have the time. I was doing other things.
Right. Hey, we had a question last week about a tomato problem and a possible virus. And actually, we have Jer on the phone with some feedback on that. Jer, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, Jer. Yep, we can hear you. What's going on?
Okay, cool. Yeah, so right at the end of the show last week, you had a gentleman on that had a problem with his tomatoes.
Right, mystery.
And that 99% sure that's a rare disease that we get in Colorado, but it's called southern blight. And
wow.
So that's I'm pretty sure that's what was going on with his tomatoes by what he was describing.
So is that a virus type thing? We were talking a little bit earlier before.
No, it's not a virus, but it is pretty nasty. It's primarily a fungal type situation, but we've got some things up here at Earth Friendly that we can direct him with to make sure the rest of his stuff doesn't get it, but he really should pull those tomatoes.
All right, Larry. That was Larry last week with the tomato problem, so Jer's recommending you pull those tomatoes and put an application
just on. Just to keep them from getting anything else in the garden.
Yeah.
Right.
Huh.
Southern blight's pretty nasty. It rarely shows up in Colorado, but it's starting to in the last couple of years. I think it's a global warming issue. So.
Yeah, we were talking amongst ourselves a little bit earlier about this year being a lot more buggy and a lot more disease showing up.
Yeah, the bugs are because we had such a finally a wet winter and then a hot summer again.
That's why the grasshoppers
have been so bad.
Yeah. And so this southern blight thing, does it need, it's a fungus, right? So it's airborne and needs a specific moisture and so on. Is that right?
It's actually a soil-borne fungal disease, typically. But it does spread when the mycelium spores sprout on the leaf tips, and then the mycelium poofs out and then goes in and spreads by landing in the soil and infecting other plants.
Yeah.
It becomes systemic.
So it can affect more than your tomatoes, maybe.
Affects plants that are similar to tomatoes in that phyla. It affects tomatoes. It can affect peppers, affect herb, it affects all those kind of things. So
would it go after potatoes also? Have you seen it in potatoes?
I don't know if it will potatoes. I wouldn't put it past it. I said, it's really weird to have it up here in Colorado. It's typically found in, Texas and places in the South, hence the name Southern Blight.
Right.
But we seem to be finding it pushing up here. I had a guy last year that had it pretty bad. He came up. I made him a special compost tea concoction that was full of microbial beneficials, and it was able to get him back on track. But he had to pull the ones that had it pretty bad.
Okay.
Huh. All right. Well, I know Larry appreciates that advice, Jer, and everyone now knows what to watch out for and what might help to remedy that. Pull those plants.
Yeah,
and
it's the same thing where it wilts down there overnight, It's almost like a root rot type thing.
Wow. Well.
Look it up. It's nasty.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Jer.
It.
Appreciate the call and the advice.
Yeah,
you bet, guys.
All right.
Awesome.
Okay, great information there. And 527-486-8186 KVNF now if you've got a question or a comment or some great advice. What about just this whole thing of disease? And Lance, you mentioned you even saw some disease on the perennial peas, which are usually pretty hardy.
Pretty hardy. I'm just starting to see wherever I go things having problems.
Mm-hmm.
And the mild winter along with being hot, and then we've had humidity pretty much for 2 weeks?
It's been humid, and
that's unusual for here. I mean, it can happen with the monsoon season coming in, but it just seems a little unusual.
Right. That's what I was thinking with this southern blight stuff.
It's,
because there's more humidity and things like that, like fire blight. Fire blight
We're just talking about that.
It's the same thing, you know. It's not the same thing, but it gets started when the conditions are just right.
Yeah, it's not really a problem, and then all of a sudden, boom, there it is.
Right.
Yeah. You know, might be here and there a little bit, but
yeah. See, yeah. This year it was all over my pear tree. Now I'm starting to see it in little mama. Mm. Man, I can't get up there. That's, you know, halfway
to
God.
Boy, that's hard to see.
Yeah.
And it's, we don't grow coffee here, but same thing with coffee rust. I mean, it's one of those things that's happening that's just an imbalance and causing.
You know what? And that has even more things going on with it than we can suspect. But let's take this call.
Yeah. We've got Michelle on the line, wants to know or talk about sclerotinites. Did I say that right, Michelle?
I don't think so.
Oh, tell me what it is.
Well, I think they're called skeletonite.
Okay.
And anyway, I found a bunch of them on my Virginia creeper just the other day, and they literally turned my Virginia creeper into a skeleton. Like, there are no leaves left. And my question about that, and I heard that they really decimate grape leaves and grape plants, and we actually have a grape vine, and so we found them on there. But my question is, I actually used a chemical on my Virginia creeper because all of my research, I could not find any green method to use, and I was freaking out because they worked so fast.
Yeah, and they were coming after you.
Yeah.
Grapes.
Yeah.
Is this like the white fly stuff?
Is this like the leafhopper white fly stuff? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I sprayed mine this spring with pyrethrum neem, two sprays, and knocked it out, and it just showed up last week, and so I hit it again last week with straight pyrethrum, and I'll do that again this week.
Well, and these are like these are little caterpillars that are yellow and black striped.
Mm-hmm. It will take care of it.
It will. Okay. So what's it called again?
Well, there's two products there: pyrethrum.
Okay.
And that's actually a extract or ground up daisies of a specific
chrysanthemums.
Chrysanthemums. Mm-hmm. Okay. And neem oil is oil from the neem tree out of India.
Okay.
And there's Azamat, which is another product made from neem tree, but it's a little bit more potent.
Yeah, I'm surprised you can't use BT on them if they're a caterpillar.
If it's a caterpillar, you could use BT.
Yeah, and I was going to use the BT, and the advice that I was given, we all choose to follow whatever we choose to. And the advice I was given was that it's so important to get every under and above and every leaf and whatever that I actually went for like a spray that you connect to a hose. I mean, it's one little area, and that's what I did. So
well, there's
that's
some other
options.
That's
your story, and you're sticking to it, girl.
Good.
Good.
Yeah.
It's scary when you see something like that just show up right out of the blue and just start eating all of your beautiful plants.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of time, though, I've had problems with that in the past, but it didn't decimate everything. And then they kind of went away.
I think the name of this is just scary to me. Skeletonites?
Well, I know,
really?
Right? Yeah, because they make everything just look down to this like a skeleton. They just...
Yeah, the problem that I found both with pyrethrum and neem, if you have I started using it a little bit more this spring, and I realized that they're broad spectrum killers. And I have an extreme amount of lacewings, ladybugs, all these beneficials. Mm-hmm. And so I cut back on the use of those. And so in this specific thing, you have this intense infestation of this thing. Go for it with whatever you can get.
Right.
Okay, cool. And one thing I will say, if this makes a difference or not, is I did, spray it at night for the bees. I mean, I was does that make a difference too, at least if you have to do that stuff to do it at night, or am I trying to make myself feel better?
Well, it helps.
Sure, a little of both.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good idea.
Right?
Well, the bees and the flying insects are usually settled down for the night, and those worms are right on the leaves.
Right.
So you had a direct contact. Usually the problem with the chemical herbicides or insecticides is like, I think that something like 80% does not hit the target.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's where the poisoning and the because it's too much. So you went in an evening time, you went directly to the plant. So you did a really good job.
With spraying. Yeah. Too.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, Michelle. Good luck with that problem.
Thank you.
All right. And, you know, we were talking about these darn leafhoppers and grasshoppers this year.
Oh, my God.
So nasty. And you've got a plan coming up here, Lulu.
Yeah, I'm going to buy about 200 yards. Or No,
no you
200
said 200 miles.
I'm going to get 200 miles of that stuff, fly paper.
Uh-huh.
And my garden is just going to be like the fly paper jungle. And I'm going to try and get the numbers down because Lance was saying, you know, that he noticed that even the peas, the perennial peas, were having trouble. And mine always have trouble because of the leafhoppers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're everywhere.
They are everywhere.
Yeah, the calendula looks terrible. Everything looks terrible.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I was noticing even my lilac today, they're just eating around the edges of the leaves. It looks like someone took
different.
That's different?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually the cutter bee, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Leaf cutter bee.
Yeah.
And they take those little pieces of leaves, and they're in holes. We'll show, you might be able to show at our house.
Uh-huh.
And they lay an egg in the back of the hole, put a leaf over it. Lay an egg, put a leaf piece of leaf over it. Lay an egg. And what's really interesting is the last egg laid is the first one to hatch because they got to come out the opposite way.
Yeah. Oh, is that crazy?
Yeah, and that's what they do. And they're a great bee.
Yeah.
Oh.
Because they are they eat aphids and
yeah. Oh,
things
right.
like this.
So right on.
It's something you want, even though they're making some stuff look pretty ratty.
That's all right if they're going to do the job for me. And, you know, we're running just a little bit late tonight, which is okay. But you're listening to KVNF 90.9 Paonia, KVMT 89.1 Montrose. And we've got another caller on the line. Tanya wants to talk about rabbits. Hi, Tanya.
God, I just tuned into your program last week, and I really liked it. You know, I have a huge rabbit problem, and I didn't know if I'm fencing it off with chicken wire, and I kind of dig it down near my, I have a little orchard, but man, the rabbits just decimate anything I have up here on Fruitland Mesa.
Uh-huh.
And I just wondered if anybody out there had any thing that they put around their trees or something. I was going to give garlic a shot next year, because I learned that on your program last week.
Yeah, well, there's, in my garden, I have 1-inch chicken wire buried the entire perimeter, and it's actually 4 feet high. Because during the winter, if there's a snow cover, they'll just go over the chicken wire. So it can't be 18, it has to be higher.
Okay.
And the other thing is, there is Liquid Fence is one product.
And what was that?
Liquid Fence.
Mm.
And it's a spray, and you can buy it, a concentrate.
You liquid can buy Fence?
Liquid fence.
Oh, fence. Thank mm-hmm. you. Sorry.
Yeah. Fence. Okay. And you'd have to spray that on all your plants in the perimeter, and it will repel them. You just have to redo it every time it rains or you water. And then there's this other product that I've been using called Repels All or Molmax, and they're from the company called Bonide. And I've been getting it at Murdoch's in, Montrose or Grand John. I think it's actually the Murdoch's in Clifton. And I just took a couple of those bags to the Paonia Farm and Home to say, could you please get this?
Mm-hmm.
And so they're going to look into it because they do clear some other bonide things. And it's all natural ingredients. In fact, Molmax is just castor beans ground up with fuller earth. And that will actually take care of any burrowing animal. That's a problem. And then the Repels All repels deer all the way down. And it's you don't want to breed that stuff, but it's all natural.
Uh-huh.
And stuff. And so those are the two products I've been using. And we've mentioned this, urine works really good, marking your place. And I know people sort of get squeamish about this, but
it works.
It mm-hmm. really works.
No, yeah. I've been asking my husband to do that.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I have been. I really have been. So, yeah, no, I agree. It does work.
It does work. And if you let it get old and really, really stinky, and then you mix it 10 to 1, 10 parts water to one part urine, and spray it around the perimeter of your garden.
All let right, so a little old. Formulation there.
Yeah, get it pretty stinky.
All right.
I'll tell you, I do have a specific bucket and sprayer, and that's all it's used for.
Uh-huh.
And well, Liza.
Awesome. No, thanks so much for that.
All right.
I want to throw this out real quick.
Yeah.
You guys were talking about grasshoppers in the mind. I'm a new caller, so you guys might have talked about it. But I have used Nolobate.
Yes, Lance is a fan of Nolobate.
Yeah, I mean, I love that. It's really, really, because I had a horrible problem. I don't have a problem anymore.
Uh-huh.
I like that, Tanya. I think I'm going with the Nolobate theory next year. Starting early. Yeah, thanks so much for your call, Tanya.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Love your program.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You know, we had a question last week. It was, I believe, Lene had a problem with soybeans, and you looked something up for her there, Lance.
I mentioned that I had some friends on Redlands Mesa that had a great crop of edamame soybeans. And, and so I called them up and got the company that they bought those from, and it was Lake Valley. They didn't have the variety on the package, but it was non-GMO. It didn't say organic or anything, but it was non-GMO edamame soybeans, and it's Lake Valley Seed Company, and they're out of Boulder. So it's probably Western grown.
Right.
And that was our biggest concern. She was getting them out of the East.
Right,
from Eastern.
Right. So that might help Lene out with her soybeans. Boy, a lot of great information, all kinds of stuff going on there. People
There's
seeing
a lot
different
of
things.
Stuff going
huh?
on, yeah.
Yeah. And you've picked some plums too, huh?
Oh, yes. The plums from Phil's plum tree up at his new property that he bought, and they're outrageously good. And we think they're Asian plums now. We've narrowed it down. Lance says Asian plums are round. And European plums or American plums are oval.
Oval or oblong.
Oblong.
Yeah.
Oblong.
Right. Well, that's a great way to wind up the show with something sweet after talking about all these bugs and critters.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll be here next Tuesday. And we thank our listeners for calling in and tuning in. And Lulu, Lance, thanks so much for your expertise.
Ta-ta
for now. It's always fun.
Have a good evening.
Bye.
You've got a cute fast pocket master, which you can make both slow and faster. I don't know who you took a shine to, or who you're about to make a sign to. I got a gal that I love so, low, little low and low.